Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all our social media outlets, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Alongside Dave Manuk, I am your host, Drew Mindell, talking about the Winnipeg Jets' 5-1 victory over the Calgary Flames. A game, a rubber match between the two teams after they split the first two contests, Dave Manuk, and the Winnipeg Jets after giving up an early goal on the power play with an emphatic statement after that, a 5-1 victory, five unanswered goals to demoralize the Calgary Flames, and I'm going to say basically end their any chance of the Flames catching the Winnipeg Jets for a playoff spot. Not saying the Flames can't catch the Montreal Canadiens. Not going to make that bold statement yet, but the Jets are now too far out of reach for the Flames to catch the Jets or the remaining games left in this season. How are you on this fine Monday evening, Mr. Manuk?
I'm well, Drew. I appreciate the intro. That was a good one. And I agree with you. I think that they're going to be hard pressed to make the playoffs. I think that the only team that I think they played, I think I saw that even though they're back of Montreal and they've played so many games in hand, they do play the Canadiens, I believe, six more times. So I think as a result, there is a chance. But I think at this point, it's a foregone conclusion. The Jets, the Leafs, and the Oilers are the top three teams in the North Division. They're the teams that are going to be battling it out. Maybe Montreal gets hot, you know, and gets on a roll, and it's those four, but those are the four teams I would imagine are going to be the four that will be duking out. And it's kind of what we expected from the Jets, right? I mean, Calgary needed this win. There's no question about it, right? I mean, we talked about it throughout the course of our Saturday show and post-game show. It was an important comeback for that, like a big win for them the last game, but they couldn't just win one, right? They're too far back already to just win one and be happy and be satisfied. And based on how things are going, you really, like I said, couldn't afford to do that. The Jets, on the other hand, were looking to kind of have a statement game because, you know, it's been an okay road trip, but it hasn't been fantastic. A long one, obviously. And you really wanted to end things on a high note and really put yourself in a position to have a real good series with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'm not suggesting the Jets were looking past Calgary, especially given the last game. But I think it was one of those games that they knew if they had a good effort and they won that contest, you know, it puts them into a good position. And what we've talked about, you really kind of step on the Flames' throats and kind of knock them out of contention in terms of the Winnipeg Jets playoff position.
You know, it's amazing. You know, this is a 1-0 game for the Flames, and they had the start they wanted. I mean, that is how they wanted to start this game. You know, jumping on the Jets, getting the early power play goal.
Someone said sweet subliminal reference, and I'm like, well, it's not so subliminal. I reference it all the time. Illegal Curve.
But what you may not be able to see Dave's whiteboard there is it does say illegalcurve.com. So that is, of course, where you can find all of your latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. You can find that after we're done with the post-game show. And, of course, you can find it tomorrow morning with the Winnipeg Jets morning papers bright and early. So Dave Manuk with the not subliminal but maybe illegible illegalcurve.com behind you over there.
I don't have the neatest handwriting. Although I will say now that we've gotten onto this thing, I mean, we've got a lot of people already in the chat, which means 171 people so far that I can see, which means you got to like it. You got to hit the subscribe button, hit the reminder button. Let's get it all going because those are important to get the channel going. So let's make sure that people are conscious of that. And we appreciate everyone who does hit the like and subscribe button. Thank you.
Absolutely. And for all those asking about the whereabouts of Mr. Ginsburg, you have no idea how much we have to pay him to show up here. So we can't afford him each and every night. His agent is a tyrant, makes what's his name, Kurt Overhart look like a reasonable negotiator. So
we do only pay him in pastrami sandwiches, but
but a lot of pastrami. That pastrami's not getting any cheaper. He demands the high-end pastrami from Bernstein's Deli, so we couldn't afford to have Ezzy on the show tonight. Hopefully he'll be back for Wednesday, but
he will be. We know that
he will be. The high-stakes negotiations aren't going to keep him away on Wednesday's show.
No, okay, he's back in for the homestand.
So there you go. That's where Ezzy is for all those asking. It's not that he slept in. It's not that he's, you know, sitting in a food coma. We just couldn't afford to have him this evening. But you have the real brain trust of Illegal Curve here anyways. Dave Manuk, myself, Drew Mindell, nice to see so many of you with us on this Monday evening. The last of this 9 o'clock stretch for the road trip. What's there? There's 2 9 o'clock games left, I think.
No. This is the second last. So there's only one more after this. It's a Saturday night game against Edmonton, I think.
Right.
In April. I don't know, sometime in April, which is, I guess, not that far away, but there is only one more 9 o'clock game.
There you go. I can handle 8 o'clock games. I can handle any other games. The 9 o'clock games were getting a little tiring, but that's okay. The Winnipeg Jets, as we mentioned, let's talk about tonight's contest, Dave. Yep. So the Flames, they need the win. You know that they need the win more than the Winnipeg Jets. They're a desperate hockey team, and they come out showing that desperation to start early in that first period. The Jets a little sluggish to start. Andrew Kopp in the penalty box, and what happens? The Calgary Flames, they capitalize, and it's 1-0 Calgary on the power play goal a couple minutes into the contest. And, you know, okay, fine. So what happens for the Winnipeg Jets? Well, they weather the storm, and then they get the absolute key goal off the, not stick, but skate of Nate Thompson. And let's start with that. In your mind, Mr. Manouk, is that a good goal? Should that goal have counted? We know the call on the ice was goal. We know that they reviewed it and the call stayed as a goal. If you were wearing your officiating stripes, would that have been a good goal?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I don't think he made a distinct kicking motion at the puck. I think he was churning his body in and trying to get towards the net and was being obstructed by the Flames defender. So I thought it was going to be close. I wouldn't have said it was 100% a good goal, but I thought Nate Thompson, channeled his inner soccer player and maybe had a little bit of an idea. But, you know, the reality is he knew he just had to get towards the net. He was trying to get there. And again, he was obstructed a little bit. So I thought it was probably going to be a good goal simply because it was ruled a good goal on the ice. So you have to really see something in his motion. And I think Kevin Sawyer said it on the broadcast that, you know, his leg was fully extended at that point. So there really wasn't more area for his leg to go. He had already kind of extended, and that's where the puck caught him. So to me, that rang true, and I thought that made a lot of sense as to why you would keep that as a good goal.
And of course, the rule is that you're allowed to redirect the puck right with your skates. You're not allowed to do a kicking motion. You know, I'm of the opinion that they should probably just scrap that rule altogether at this point in time. I mean, the reason the rule exists is they don't want players with their blades up in the air, you know, kicking at a puck. So that's really right. What it is. So there's a way to do that without sort of with maybe rewording the rule. They've basically reworded the rule enough so that unless it's the most obvious, blatant, you know, lining up like our buddy Troy Westwood trying to kick a field goal from 35 yards out, unless you're doing that, they're probably going to count the goal they did there, and all of a sudden that Calgary Flames lead that was 1-0 is no longer. It's 1-1. Jets getting a key unexpected goal from that fourth line. That fourth line, which, you know, usually if there's anybody that's getting scoring for that fourth line, it's a guy like Matthew Perreault. Nate Thompson, it's a Passover miracle, Dave. Second goal of the season for Illegal Curve's favorite player on the Winnipeg Jets.
Didn't he score his other goal on Purim? I mean, there might be a theme here. But Nate Thompson might want to look
Jewish at that. Jewish holidays, Nate Thompson steps up the game.
But I will say, you know, Matthew Perreault doesn't get an assist on that goal, but he deserves one because he had the hard forecheck that led to that getting turned over and you know, eventually ending up in the back of the Flames net and giving the Jets that energy they needed, that fight back to get into the game. So, again, Matthew Perreault has been doing a lot of little things right for this Winnipeg Jets team, and he is staying healthy and, you know, contributing on that fourth line. It's hard to argue with. And again, it's a hefty salary for Matthew Perreault, but for the minutes that he's being, you know, given, he's doing a lot with him. So you got to give him credit. And again, like I said, it's one of those plays he doesn't get an assist on, but to me, that obviously, if his forecheck doesn't happen, the likelihood of that goal is that the Flames have the puck and they get it out of their zone easily. So he's got to get a lot of credit for that, I think, and for getting that play going.
There's no question. He's been terrific on for the Winnipeg Jets all season long. And this is a guy who, remember, they did put him through waivers. Not a surprise that nobody claimed him, but they put him through waivers at the start of the year. Obviously, the Jets are happy that nobody did claim him. 1-1 at that point in time, so it's anybody's ball game. You know, there's only a couple minutes left in the first period, and you think, okay, you know, at that point, maybe it's going to go 1-1 into the first intermission. Well, at that point in time, it became the Nikolai Ehlers show. And Mark Scheifele gets the goals, and he gets the second goal, and he gets the Jets' third goal, and the second goal coming at the 18-13 mark of the first period. But you can't talk about the Scheifele safety goal without talking about what Nikolaj Ehlers did, to set those goals up. It was just absolutely beautiful what Ehlers was doing. The first Scheifele goal, he starts to play in his own zone with just a fantastic, very small, short pass to Kyle Connor. Then yep. Connor and Scheifele break in on the two-on-one. I'm pretty sure that Matthew Tkachuk is still on the ice in the neutral zone, having trying to dive there to generate a penalty on the Winnipeg Jets. No dice. The referees didn't fall for it. And it's Ehlers to Connor. Connor takes it up. He feathers it over to Scheifele, one-timer, and it's 2-1 Jets late in the second period. They go, as our buddy Dennis Bayak says, bang, bang, and the Jets have that lead.
Yeah, I mean, I said this tweet out because I thought it was ironic that Nikolaj Ehlers was having such a phenomenal game. And, you know, when there was all this talk about Nikolaj Ehlers being this Marshall's question leads into that. I said his contract years ago, we thought his contract looked like a steal. Yeah. And now it's Grant Larceny. I mean, it's just, he is, and I think Scott Billick from the Winnipeg Sun had jokingly said, I don't know how, because there's an article about the best wingers in the NHL and Nikolaj Ehlers was left off that list recently. And I thought to myself, like, do people not pay attention to hockey? Like, I get that, you know, you're always sometimes tunnel vision and localized and you pay attention to what's going on in front of you or what's in your city. But I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, his game is just continued to reach new levels, and what he was able to do to pass that puck and get those pucks to Mark Scheifele. I mean, it was phenomenal. I mean, his overall game is just, I mean, and you know what? And there's a play that he made when the Jets were on the power play, and it was 4-1, I think, in the third period, or maybe it was 5-1. Sorry, it was in the third period. I'm going to jump ahead, but the Jets are up 5-1. They're in cruise control. And I jokingly said the game at this point, it felt like it at 4-1, especially at 5-1. It was like a game. It was like a Seinfeld episode. It was like a show about nothing. Felt like at that time, both teams were just like, let's get through this game without killing each other.
Well, the Jets were happy to do that, but the Flames were, I mean, embarrassed as far as I'm concerned, but go on.
Right. But the only thing I was going to say is that, but just to show you how Nikolaj Ehlers' level of compete, it's a Jets power play. The puck is about to go out of the zone and he like, burn speed to get to the blue line, to keep that puck in, to keep the Jets power play going in the Calgary zone. And I thought to myself, you're up 5-1 and you're still putting forth that kind of effort. And that's what we're seeing, what we've seen from Nikolaj Ehlers. We've seen more, even more so this year. And again, it seemed that we saw that shift early where Pierre-Luc Dubois flopped with Mark Scheifele. Talk about working, right? I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time, how good Scheifele would be with Ehlers and Connor, and you know, while they may not necessarily be the best defensive line, you know, they're going to be high event on both ends of the rink, I suspect. But again, it worked and it got everybody going. And Mark Scheifele had 2-1, Kyle Connor had 2, and Nikolaj Ehlers had 3 assists, and he looked phenomenal tonight.
So let's talk about the decision by Paul Maurice. So obviously no game day skate today to speak of, or I mean, there was a skate. The problem is there's nobody from Winnipeg in the arena. So the coverage of the game day skates is a lot lesser than it would be in a quote unquote normal season where, you know, we would be there if it was in Winnipeg. Some of our friends would be traveling with the team or traveling, you know, following the team around, you know, so you didn't really have anything from Jets game day skate whatsoever. So you didn't really know. Nobody had any idea about the switch of Scheifele and Dubois. And obviously it worked. And you know, it worked for Scheifele, Connor, and Ehlers. It even worked for Dubois, Stastny, and Wheeler, with Dubois getting that 5-1 goal very early in the third period. But, you know, I'll give credit to Paul Maurice here. You know, I didn't really expect that there was going to be any change for the Winnipeg Jets because he's been so hesitant to make any changes for the Winnipeg Jets, even among the current 12 forwards. He makes that one switch, manna from heaven for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. And, you know, heaven help any team that's going to try and figure out a way to shut down Scheifele, Ehlers, and Connor on a regular basis.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because that's what Ray Ferraro was talking about, was that idea of being able to flip-flop the centers and get dynamic changes to your lineup with such a minimal move, right? Or appears to be a minimal move, but obviously has a significant impact. And I think that's what we were watching tonight. We were seeing the ability to give Mark Scheifele two very different wingers from what Paul Stastny and Blake Wheeler are, but not to remove the ability of those, like the entire group, to kind of get going. And you know, the truth is you needed them to get going. It's great to get a goal from the fourth line, but you need the reason the first and second line get the big minutes, the big bucks, big everything, is because they're the ones you need to produce. So you want the third line to get goals. You know, you want this fourth line to occasionally chip in. But, you know, that bulk of your production has obviously got to come from that first and second lines. And again, I don't care. You know, Pascal Vincent often jokes about, you know, we don't have line numbers here. And it doesn't really matter if it's one or two. I mean, I think would agree that the Mark Scheifele, Nikolaj Ehlers, Kyle Connor is your number one line unequivocally, really. And the other one would be your number two line. But the truth is you're going to need production from everybody. You're going to need them all producing. And even just that the Wheeler pass to Dubois, you know, that's good to get those guys feeling good as well. I mean, you've got the other line feeling great. It's good to get the other line because, again, even though they're not looking ahead, you got a series against Toronto that is going to be huge. I mean, it's only a two-game series, but you're 2 points back of Toronto. So you know you've got a big one coming in, and you want your lines firing on all cylinders.
Absolutely right. And this is, you know, if you look at the Jets, if you look at the players who scored for the Jets tonight, so you have Scheifele who gets his two goals, that comes from the first line, quote-unquote first line. Dubois gets his goal, that comes from the second line. Kopp gets a goal. Now, it happened in the middle of a line change. He was sort of playing where Kyle Connor would normally be, but Kopp gets a goal, that's from your third line. And Nate Thompson gets a goal, again, that's from your fourth line. So if you're getting goals, if you're getting five goals in a game, you're doing well. If you're getting goals, five goals in a game, and you're getting them from all four lines, you're doing really well. And that, to me, is the takeaway for me for the game tonight is just how the Winnipeg Jets suck the life out of the Calgary Flames. Really, after, you know, you can say after the Thompson goal, you can even say after the first Scheifele goal, but at that point on, the Calgary Flames just, I mean, you don't want to ever accuse a professional athlete of giving up, but boy, that's sort of how they look. They tweeted about it, you know, right before the third period started that, you know, 4-1 for the Winnipeg Jets. The Calgary Flames are playing basically for their playoff lives. And what happens in the third period? They make the goaltending switch. Maybe they get a boost from David Rittich coming in. Well, he gives up a weak one to start. You know, I think that the Dubois goal was what? 54, a minute four into the third period. Yeah, from then on, they might as well not have played the rest of the third period. The Jets were happy to not do anything, and the Flames didn't do anything themselves. And that's a sign of a team that's just absolutely mailed it in, given up on the season. At least tonight they were for the Calgary Flames. Embarrassing effort for the Flames. Jets dominant effort, and that's what you can do when, you know, it's a lot harder to do it against the Leafs and the Oilers, and you know, maybe to a little bit of a lesser extent than to the Montreal Canadiens. But that's what all the top teams in the North have been doing to some of the lesser teams, and almost the Jets more than anyone else, because the Jets have that successful record against the Canucks, the Flames, the Senators, where other teams have struggled against, you know, some of those lesser teams.
Yeah, and you went 4-1 on this road trip against the Canucks and the Flames, and that's what you need to do. I mean, those are the teams that are beneath you in the standings, and you need to keep them beneath you, and you do that by winning and winning in regulation. So the Jets did what they needed to do, and again, I didn't expect them to sweep the Flames, but we talked about it last week before the series even began. We said if the Jets take 2 of 3 from Calgary, it's essentially over. You know, what is their lead now on the Flames in the standings? 11?
It's 11, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah,
I think it's 11, right? So, it's 11.
With the game in hand.
With a game in hand, that's right. And they only play one more time, so they've only got one more game against Calgary. But the truth is, I mean, it's essentially you've put an end to that series between the Jets and the Flames, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the Flames catching the Jets for a playoff spot. I think, Drew, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I watched that Calgary team, and they came out with that piss and vinegar, that attitude that you kind of expected them to, right, in the first period. And they got it. And, you know, the truth is, I'll just say this quickly because I know Paul raises up. I'm going to go to him right away. But the one thing I was going to say is, had they scored that a second goal when they had that another early power play opportunity, but Connor Hellebuyck was excellent again. You know, I mean, they had the high danger, the Jets outshot them, and they had the higher, I think the Corsi was higher for the Jets. But the one thing
it was gonna say pretty is, close. So it was basically the high danger chances.
High danger chances, which is what I was going to get to, was higher for Calgary than it was for Winnipeg. And early, I'm saying.
Early in the game.
And I was going to say, and the expected goals was higher. So you watched that and you thought to yourself, but Connor Hellebuyck was excellent. Connor Hellebuyck was, you know, Connor Hellebuyck made some big saves. And again, that's what he does. That's why you pay him for. That's why he's one of the best in the NHL. And again, he keeps his team in it. And then what do? They answer back.
Absolutely. Jets head coach Paul Maurice is at the dais. We'll bring in Paul Maurice here in 1 second.
this season. I had to do a bunch, you know, go back through the papers, look through the lineups and see if that group has been put together with Mark. And I'm curious, I didn't see that it has. So I'm kind of curious what took so long.
Really? I've liked the way that the structure of our lines, we've been a pretty good team. So I don't think it was as clearly obvious as you suggest. Some of it had to do with the matchup from our last game, but some of it had to do with the lines you write out 6 weeks ago, you know, or 2 months ago after we get Pierre Luc back in our lineup. So when you get to the end of a really, really long road trip and your team's played well and had a tough loss, sometimes you need something to kind of almost fire up a little interest, if that makes sense. Like it's a long grind. So just one of the old coaches I used to work with, Kevin McCarthy, always said a change is as good as a rest. And we're kind of always looking to figure out what Pierre Luc would look like with Blake Wheeler. That's more of it. I've seen Kyle Connor and I've seen Kyle and Scheife and Nicky in pieces over time. I have an understanding of them as players, but I've been interested in what Pierre Luc and Blake could look like together. So that was the driver. Just more, I needed to, something I thought to get the players kind of a different look. You know, there's lots of offense I thought in Pierre Luc's line that didn't quite get completed over the last couple of games. So that was good. I really liked their line, like kind of going into the game two of Vancouver. So there was no impetus to change prior to that. So those are the things that went into it today.
We'll go next to Ken Weaver from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Weaver.
Well, how has your group built this kind of reservoir of resilience, and what does it mean when that becomes a calling card?
Well, it's an important strength to build over time, that you can suffer a tough one and then I'll go back to kind of what I've alluded to earlier. They have a really strong understanding of the game. So in game two of this three games series, and the pressure really had shifted to Calgary, they came hard, we handled it right, and then just some bad breaks around our net. So they didn't leave the game feeling the other team is better than we are, or, you know, we failed in the game, which is kind of, there's some adjustments we need to make, but we're right there. And I think that's been pretty consistent with all of our games, even the back-to-back Edmonton losses. We weren't far off in that game, and they understood that. So there's an intelligence and a maturity that's needed for that to take place. But they rebound well. You know, they're rested, and as much as you can be in what we're going through, they're rested and they're smart.
We'll go next to Jamie Thomas from 680 CJOB Jets Radio. Go ahead, Jamie.
Hey, Paul. Would you say the best performance of the last two road trips came at the end of each trip? And if you agree with me, what's the reasoning behind that, do you think?
Well, the Toronto series, I do agree with you. The Toronto series was really interesting because they were dominant in a couple areas in those first two games. We got 3 out of 4 points, but they were better than we were. And really played a fine game in the third, maybe our best this year in terms of, you know, kind of getting things corrected in the series and getting better. And I thought it would be the same theme here for tonight, Jamie. Like we found the slot at the right times. We were better underneath pucks in our own end. We created things off the rush because of that. So there's a certain amount of patience that was in that game, even down 1-0, but being able to, and that was Mark and that line, right? Being underneath pucks in their own end and then, you know, using almost their aggressiveness to our advantage and be able to come up the ice and create off that rush. So I keep going back to, you know, what's interesting is the conversations that you have with players, and this is true of the coaching staff. We have far more interesting conversations now. We're not with players. We're not talking about trying to get a young guy going or trying to fix a young guy's game. We're more interacting on what you see, and we're learning from them as much as we're directing them, and that's, it's always more fun to work like that.
We'll go next to Ken Campbell from the Hockey News. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, Paul, when when you make the change that you made tonight and then you look at the production you got sort of from all four of your lines, does it lead you to believe what a lot of people outside of Winnipeg believe, and that is that the Winnipeg Jets are blessed with the deepest and best forward core in the NHL?
I would say that we have, Ken, a lot of different looking players here that mesh well together. So if you took the lines tonight, and we can play with kind of the offensive groupings, if you will. You know, the Lowry line has scored an awful lot of goals for us lately, and it's a checking hard, more physical line. And then you'd had kind of a hybrid. The next two lines are hybrid in some ways. We've got a physical player or a bigger man on each of the next two offensive lines, and then we kind of shifted more to. I guess what I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of pieces now that are movable because they've played together for a little while. But some of that really is all a function in ways of our fourth line, right? So you've got these three veteran players. Two of them are penalty killers, one's on the power play. And they're coming off the bench after a TV timeout. And I know Monahan's coming, but that's the line I want on the ice in the D zone. So now you've got kind of each line can do different things. So this would be the first bench that I've run in 25 years that have a spectrum of talent and grit. So it's a pretty good group, and I think it's better.
We'll go next to Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Sean.
Thanks, Gregor. Hey, Paul. I know in the past you've said you believe Mark, with so many speed demons on your team, that Mark is the fastest player on that team. When you put him with speed demons like Kyle Connor and Nick Ehlers, what does that open up in his game?
So, you know, when you look at Andrew Koskal, it's a seam path, right? And it goes back through the feet into the back door. Players that can play can make plays at a high rate of speed. I think and this might be a thing about TV and replays. We've kind of fallen in love with the guy who can slow the game down, right? But the really great guys can make the plays at high level speed, right? And I think that's what you saw off that rush. So he's just such an efficient skater that you don't notice it how fast he's going, but Mark can make plays at high speeds, and both those guys in the wing can as well. It'll work. You know, those three guys will work really well together against certain matchups, I think. And what we need to do in the last 20 games is kind of get two or three options, depending on the kind of teams we're playing. So we have a really strong idea of what Stasty, Scheif, and Wheeler look like. And then now we'll take a look at Connor and Scheif and Nicky in kind of a different men role. When you look at Dubois' line, I think they were at about 14 and a half here tonight. So it changes some things for our team, but we need to kind of figure out who all these guys are a little bit with Pierre-Luc being new to our team. We're still working on that.
We'll go next to Scott Billick from The Sun. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, Paul. Dylan noticed tonight, but Dylan DeMille is quite a good game in my mind. It really steps up on the, I think it's the first Scheifele goal, to make the defensive play in the own zone to get to separate the puck. Right. I guess what I'm asking is, what is Dylan doing? You've had him on the top pairing, the pairing. He's responded well both.
He really can, for the most part, is every single night. And so I think playing with Logan Stanley, like, it's almost the perfect guy for him to play with right now, right? Because he's talking on the bench the entire time, and he's working plays, and he's interacting with the forwards on the bench, but very, very consistent with his play. I mean, you're not going to get drawn to him. Your eyes don't get drawn to him during a game because of offensive things normally. But there's so many good positional defensive things, good sticks in his own end, breaking up plays, flushing pucks. That you know, have a really strong appreciation for the game he plays.
Very much, Coach.
keeping Winnipeg laughing for over... keeping Winnipeg laughing. Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club. Bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal, starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're at the post-game edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tuesday morning now, no longer Monday night. It's now Tuesday morning, about 7 minutes after the top of the hour. Nice to see so many of you with us here. While you're here, in case you haven't already done so, smash the like button.
It's impossible. We have like over 300 people in the chat right now. Yeah, we only have 135 likes, which means... time to hit that like button, folks.
Hit subscribe. That like button, folks.
Like, subscribe, smash. ring that bell, ring it.
Exactly, ring it, smash it, ring it, press it, stroke it, however you want to do. Well, maybe don't stroke it right now. Do that in your own time.
It's a family show.
Yeah, exactly. That's a separate issue altogether. That was Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
Those were interesting comments. I thought those were interesting comments. Because what did that say to you? What stuck out to you from his comments? Because one thing stuck out in particular to me.
What stuck out to you? I mean, maybe I might not be on the same page as you.
I wasn't trying to trick you. I just was curious.
Just about that Jeff Hamilton is now public enemy number one. Two
things. One, Jeff Hamilton will not be getting a Christmas card for Paul Maurice. Yeah. But number two,
I think Paul, just for the record, I think Jeff maybe worded his question.
In a manner different than how
he wanted to.
Sorry, I just read one of the comments, which I won't read aloud, but it was funny. No, what I was going to say, what jumped out to me was he's clearly setting himself up for these guys to be mix and match, interchangeable, because specifically he's guarding against what happened last year, which is he lost Mark Scheifele, the whole team, and obviously Patrick Laine, and the team fell apart. And then, I mean, you lose one of your best wingers and your top center, and most teams are going to fall apart. But I think what really came across to me was him being able to say, I can have a mix and match lineup, and I'm going to be able to play Pierre-Luc Dubois with player X, or I'm going to be able to play Blake Wheeler with player Y, or any of these guys. And I think as a result, that's what he's saying he's wanting. And, you know, to your point, Drew, like I went back when we were watching the post game with the coach, and I went back and I looked, and they're very calculated, right? To your point, there was nobody in the arena. Mm-hmm. And so clearly none of the Flames guys, because we follow them on our Illegal Curve account as well, nobody said anything about the Jets lineup being different, right? And so, and they didn't tweet it out, which the Jets normally do. The Jets normally put out a media, like, here's the lineup, here's the way things are going to play out. Yeah. I went back and looked. They didn't tweet that out. So again, a little subterfuge from the team trying to keep things quiet before they do this. But again, like, to me, that was what I drew from his press conference, was this idea that he wants a team that they are not reliant on, oh, your top line has produced X, Y, and Z, and now you can't go away from them. He wants to be able to say, Scheifele's playing with whomever, and everybody, like, basically, like I said, down the line, you can play with whomever, and if something happens.
Well, to your point there, so you twofold. One, you create matchup problems for every other team, but I mean, the Jets forward group should create matchup problems on a regular basis.
Right.
Two, what stuck, now that you mentioned it, what stuck it to me is, you know, we're sitting here now and we have 20 games left in the regular season.
Right.
And it's almost like Paul Maurice is spending the next 20 games
100%.
Prepping the team for the playoffs. Yep. And sort of trying to decipher what lineup and what forward groups are going to work
and
best
for the Winnipeg Jets.
And deep pairings. Certainly, yeah. Deep pairings too. But you know that Paul Maurice is, you know, let's assume you're going to play either Edmonton in the first round or Toronto. You're going to have to go through one of those two teams eventually, if not both of those two teams.
Sure.
The ability to put out Dubois or Lowry against McDavid and Dreisaitl and Matthews and Marner and Tavares and everybody. Those are if the Jets have one good defensive centerman, and you put them out against, Matthews, well, then you're going to get burned by the next guy. Right. The Jets have that center depth. I mean, I haven't even mentioned Paul Stastny. If the Jets elect to move him up the middle, which I still think is a distinct possibility between now and the end of the regular season, especially as Mason Appleton continues to perform and as Andrew Kopp continues to perform, I could definitely see a scenario where Paul Stastny moves back up the middle. I mean, I think the Jets are now, not that they're home free, because they're not home free, but right. They're in a position now where they can almost try things, and they've built up such a buffer that if you go 500 the rest of the year against the Torontos, the Edmontons, and the Montreals, yep. And you continue to put up the a 600 or a 650 or a 700. I mean, what did they go against? They went 800 in winning percentage against the Flames and the Canucks on this road trip, four out of right. five.
Mm-hmm.
You do that against the lessers in the North, and you just sort of tread water against the big boys in the North, you're in a pretty good spot come playoff time. Because, I mean, home ice advantage doesn't really matter. And, Toronto, Winnipeg, and Edmonton have to be sitting there saying, well, what's the point of the next 20 games? It's to get ready for the playoffs. It's to ensure that we don't get it. You don't get injured. And sure, there's a little bit of positioning, jockeying, but it really doesn't matter much between 1-2, even 3-4, I would say.
Well, and the other thing I was going to say, Drew, to your point, is that he's also doing this to guard against injury, right? Because the Jets sure. have been lucky in the sense that they've had, two or three guys really from their lineup get injured. They lost Patrick Laine, and obviously Pierre-Luc Dubois suffered an injury, Tucker Pullman and Nathan Beaulieu. But for the most part, this has been a healthy group. And I think what he's also ensuring is if they lose a guy, that's funny, if they lose a guy to I should read it out, because if people listen to the podcast, they might not see this. The way we're seeing is the way that people, but if someone just tweeted, apparently as he looked dopey last game, so he's a healthy scratch tonight. Yeah, he is definitely a healthy scratch.
But by the way,
actually, he's not a healthy scratch. There's nothing healthy about Ezzy. So he's probably he's a scratch, but he's not necessarily a healthy scratch.
And Ezzy has looked dopey for much of the last 37 years. So it's not a tonight thing.
If that was the distinction, is that was the criteria for making Ezzy a scratch, he'd be a scratch a lot of nights. But anyways, so I just think, like, what he's doing, again, is one is to ensure that he can mix and match if guys aren't going. He can also mix and match if guys aren't in the lineup. And I think that's a real important sort of element here, is that, again, you've had a very lucky season so far. And Paul Maurice has acknowledged this. They've been lucky. They've, despite the fact that it's a condensed schedule, they've managed, and you have to give them credit. They've managed the rest and recovery phase of the season. And he's talked about it to that certain degree, saying not getting on a plane, for example, not getting on a plane after the game ended on Saturday night and getting on a plane and flying to wherever, whether it's back to Winnipeg or Vancouver or Edmonton, or, well, Edmonton's not such a big deal from Calgary, but you know what I mean? That idea of them having to get on a plane after playing. They're actually resting and recovering. They're not skating the next day. We talked about that already on one of our previous shows.
When was the last time the Jets had a real practice?
Paul Maurice said before they left, I want to say, maybe 3 weeks ago, he said that they're going to have a total of two days of practice in the next 6 to 7 weeks, maybe. It was not a lot. So, I mean, and that will preclude, for the record, when people are like, why is player A not, or X, Y, or Z not getting in the lineup? The reason they're not getting in the lineup, and you made this point on Saturday, and I think it's 100% accurate, is that if they're not getting an opportunity to practice with their lines, the likelihood of them getting into a game is insignificant.
That's a funny comment from Brian there. The Jets had a practice tonight, is what he says,
which is excellent
shade at the Calgary Flames.
But they did, though. You know, I mean, the truth is, they, like I said, when it was 4-1, when the Jets made it 4-1, it just felt like that game was over. And by the third period, I was going to tweet, like, they need to go to running time, because A, we wanted to start the show earlier, and B, it was just it just didn't seem like there was any point to playing anymore at that point. And again, credit to the Jets, because Jets didn't stop, right? The Jets had the lead. And again, like I said, Nikolaj Ehlers highlighting that, was still giving her, still in his his speedy self to keep plays alive, even though he could have very easily not. But although, except for that one play, I did see that one play where he was coming back defensively, because it was going to be a 2-on-1 for the Flames. And it appeared that right as he crossed into the blue line, Jets blue line, he was stuck in quicksand. His skate just like stopped. And then, but other than that, like I said, he was still trying to get back, obviously. But no, Calgary just didn't have the fight. It didn't seem like a team that was, you know, desperate. And that's what we've talked about so many times from the Jets when they've suffered regulation losses. How will they come back from the game? And every time, from the most part, this season, they've come back, whether it's riding Connor Hellebuyck or not, they've been able to come back and get a win the next game. The Flames, in a game that was essentially one, I would almost call it like a must win, they didn't even come close to it.
Five shots in the third period for the Calgary Flames. And sure, you know, you can be upset about the David Riddick goal, giving up that goal early in the third period. But I mean, you have to have more professional pride. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it on Saturday. We talked about it really throughout this three-game series. The Calgary Flames look like a franchise, look like an organization that is, just doesn't know what they are. And obviously, I think serious changes are afoot, or are going to be afoot in Calgary whenever this season comes to an end for them. And they're not completely out of it. I mean, look, they're only a couple points behind the Montreal Canadiens, but the Habs have 6 games in hand. So let's assume those 6 games go, reasonably well for Montreal. Then Calgary's out of it, and then Vancouver's out of it, and then Ottawa's out of it. I think, what did I see on, I don't know if it was The Athletic or a Sports Club Stats, one of those sites, the chances of anyone other than Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Montreal making the playoffs out of the North was something like 14%, and that was before tonight's game. So that's probably even lower now. So I mean, it's a four-way battle in the North Division, and I really do think that Toronto, Winnipeg, and Edmonton, and Montreal again as well, I don't really think they care who wins the division. I don't know that if you win the division and you play the fourth place team, there's any great advantage there. The Montreal Canadiens certainly scare me, as an opponent, if they're the weakest of the four teams in the North Division. Way back at the beginning of the season, I said the Montreal Canadiens, to me, are a very dangerous team in that division, and nothing's changed despite the fact that they might be struggling a little bit. Look, Montreal in regulation has only lost 8 times all year.
Would you rather face Mike Smith or Carey Price?
I'd much rather face Mike Smith, no question about it. And that's why, that's why Montreal scares me more than Edmonton, because as great as McDavid and what did Blake Wheeler call him on after Saturday's game? Called him a super freak or something like that? That's why, even though that McDavid is a super freak, facing Mike Smith in the playoffs is a lot more palatable than facing Carey Price and a lot of the other players that the Montreal Canadiens have.
Yep.
And getting ahead of ourselves there,
though. No, of course. And I think, videos of Reddit just in the chat said the Jets can take anyone if they keep rolling their lines like this. Not sure what the trainer put in the water, but keep it going. Well, you're now highlighting it. But I think it's a good point. I think it's one thing we've talked about for how long, Drew, is the fact that you can't. I remember it was early on, Mark Scheifele played a 26-minute game. And I thought to myself, like, in a condensed schedule, how are you going to burn a player like that out and let him play that kind of those kind of minutes? And you just can't afford to. And it's one thing we've talked about. And I got to tell you, every press conference Paul Maurice has had over the last, I don't know, I mean, I can't remember how long, how many times has he praised the fourth line?
Tons. All the
Seriously.
Time.
And again, maybe that's him being sensitive to the idea that everyone's on him for to change that fourth line. But he talks about that fourth line as if he said, what did he say? What was his comment today? It's the first time in 25 years of coaching that he's had the reliability or something like that in terms of a fourth line and the confidence, whatever it was. You can just see the way he talks about that fourth line right now.
Mm-hmm. Again, getting a regular shift. I mean, you look at the time on ice tonight. You know, Josh Morrissey led all Winnipeg Jets in time on ice. That in and of itself is not a surprise, but right. How low the number was. Usually Josh Morrissey leading the Jets in time on ice, 24, 25, 26 minutes.
Right.
21, 27 for Josh Morrissey tonight. I mean, that's nothing for a defenseman, you know, relatively, you know, speaking. You know, his playing partner, Tucker Poolman, 1953. DeMello, 1935. Pionk, 1905. I mean, this is a coach's dream where you can basically throw anybody you want over the boards, mm-hmm. and at least tonight, and they were going to get a good result against an overmatched and uninterested Calgary Flames team. Okay, yeah. David, before we wrap it up, let's talk about Wednesday and Friday, because obviously those are the two next games for the Winnipeg Jets against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yep.
The Leafs losers tonight at home to Edmonton. Both games, the Saturday night game between the Oilers and the Leafs and tonight's game against the Oilers and the Leafs, both games were 3-point games because, of course, they were. It's the NHL.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the Winnipeg Jets, they have to I don't think it's what it was the last time they played when they had the 3-game series in Toronto and they're looking to make a statement. I don't believe that's what we have here. I think you're going to have two very good hockey teams playing and – you know, if the Jets win or lose, I mean, assuming it's not, you know, outrageously one-sided, I don't think that either team is going to make a statement here, even if the Jets were to win both games on Wednesday and Friday.
Yeah, I mean, you've got pretty similar teams, right? You've got the Jets they've played the one more game, but they've got three more goals for. They've given up 8 more goals against this season. To your point, Drew, I don't think any team, either team is going to say, well, we've now locked ourselves into the to be the representatives of the North Division because we win this 2-game miniseries. And again, Toronto hasn't been playing their best hockey over the course of the last, you know, they're 4-5-1 in their last 10. Jets are 6-4-0. And I think it's one of those situations where if you just have to, like, again, I don't know what's Toronto's schedule in terms of where they played in Toronto against the Oilers tonight, right?
Correct. So they're coming, they're flying here tomorrow, presumably.
But I mean, like, are they starting a long road trip, or are they just going to Winnipeg for two and then going back?
Well, let's see if I can load it up. So they got Winnipeg on Wednesday, they got Winnipeg on Friday, and they go to Calgary on Sunday and Monday. Okay. So they're heading west for 4 games, just like Winnipeg's coming home for 4 games. Yeah. Toronto's heading west for 4 games.
Yeah. So I mean, again, I think it's one of those. I don't think it's a huge statement. I mean, I think both teams are going to be jacked up to play it for the simple fact of the matter that you're playing for first place and you're playing for you know, both teams have a lot of pride and you want to make it a statement. Again, as to whether it will become that, I'm not entirely certain, but I think that, you know, if you're the Jets, you're feeling good about your game overall. Connor Hellebuyck is playing like Connor Hellebuyck again. I mean, not like again, but like not that he stopped, but you know what I mean? Like he's just Connor Hellebuyck. So I think it's one of those things that, you know,
he had sort of that confident arrogance to his game tonight. You know,
well, the double first pack stack on Monahan. When he double crossed,
you know, they came across there. I mean, the first goal gets in, and there's nothing you can do about that one. It's a beautiful pass.
No, it was a beautiful pass by Tkachuk.
But after that, you know, really, once the Jets took the lead, and not that Calgary had any great push because they really didn't, but you sort of just got the feeling that Connor Hellebuyck, you know, when the puck was, you know, there were a couple instances where the puck would come in from the point, and he was big and he was soft and he was pillowy, and the puck just, you know, hit him and no rebounds, nothing. I mean, I guess the Flames got the goal disallowed after Lucic, you know, I mean, I don't know what Lucic is doing. Between Lucic, you know, hitting the goalie and then the puck going in, you know, obviously not counting, and between Tkachuk flailing on the ice like a fish out of water, you just wonder what the Calgary Flames are doing on a regular basis.
Well, I don't really seem to be wondering it because
you're right. We watched it.
We watched it, and you know, look, again, like I said, it's not good enough. You know, this is almost like, I want to call it not the North Division. It's like the Chaos Division, because, you know, we talked about it with Haley Salavian on Saturday. This is one of those situations who covers the Flames for The Athletic.
Yeah.
And it seems like a team, you know, has a good, the Jets are the only team, again, that doesn't really have the fan base apoplectic because they seem to be consistent, right? Yeah. They haven't gone on any crazy long winning streaks, but they've just been consistent. They haven't allowed a long losing streak. But every other team, it seems, will be able to kind of turn things around. You get win 2-3 games in a row and everybody's excited and you're planning the parade. And then all of a sudden, like we saw when they, to your point, Drew, is on Saturday, the dead cat bounce for Sutter's hiring.
Yeah.
The Flames look like they're who they are. And again, you don't fire a coach when your team is good. You know, look, every once in a while, the coach is just not able to get anything out of his team. And it could be a very good team that he's not getting anything out of. But more often than not, if you're firing a coach, probably because the team stinks, i.e. the Buffalo Sabres tonight, who had a 3-0 lead. Like, is that Ralph
Kruger's? In the third period.
A 3-0 lead over a Philadelphia team that hasn't been playing well, didn't have Carter Hart in net, and it's the third period and you lose 4-3 in overtime. Was that Ralph Kruger's fault? No, it's because Buffalo stinks. I mean, obviously it's not Ralph Kruger's fault because he was fired, but you know what I mean? Like, the reality is sometimes teams just stink, and that's just what happens, and it doesn't really matter. Now they've lost their losing streak? 18?
16 losses in a row.
Yeah. I mean, but isn't it like a winless streak of 18?
No, because they got
I think it's I thought it was 18. I thought they did something
It's winless in 16, but they've had points. You know,
they've had points. They've had two. They've had a OT loss, right? Two of them, I think.
Right. If I recall correctly. I think they had gone 8 in a row in regulation without winning, but now it's 6. Or Brian's saying it's 18. Okay, sorry, Brian's right. I'm wrong.
Well, that would mean I was right. Brian and I are right, and Drew is wrong, and I'll take that. Thank you, Brian, for the confirmation. But the point is that sometimes teams just stink. And Calgary, who, again, has a very good goaltender in Jacob Markstrom, and we've talked to Kevin Woodley, who's a goaltending expert out on the West Coast. And Kevin has said, you know, Jacob Markstrom had better numbers than almost anybody, I think better than anybody in the NHL from the numbers he's privy to, which is not publicly available. And yet, what do we see? We saw like a cat, and that was always kind of the one thing that everybody was talking about. Are you going to finally have your first time since, you know, Mika Kiprusoff, who took them to the promised land all those years ago? Are you going to finally have the solution for the problems in Calgary? Well, we're seeing that that's obviously not the solutions. They're just not able to do it. So again, I just don't know that Calgary's a very good team. I think the Jets did what they needed to do. You know, you got the win, critical. Got 2 out of 3, of course, but you end the road. I think that what was critical was ending the road trip in the manner in which they did, which leaves them feeling really good going into an important series against Toronto, whereas Toronto, you know, had were down 1-0, took a 2-1 lead, and ended up ultimately losing to the Oilers in the overtime. So Toronto's coming in, you know, not necessarily feeling so good about themselves. The Jets are feeling good about the way they played Calgary. Again, Calgary and Edmonton, two very different teams, but it doesn't really matter at the end of the day because you bank the points, feeling good about yourself, and you're going home. 4 games, and you're going to think, okay, well, you know, we have a chance to play for the division lead right now, and we've got lines that are feeling good about each other. So I think the Jets have a lot to like from this road trip.
There, we'll leave it on that note. We remind everybody, while you're still here in the chat, if you haven't already, smash the like button, smash the subscribe button, get alerted each and every time we go live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show or the Illegal Curve post-game show. Winnipeg Jets victorious by a 5-1 margin tonight. They improve to 22-12-2 on the season, move into second place in the North Division, 1 point behind the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are in town Wednesday and Friday, 1 point ahead of the Edmonton Oilers, who are doing battle tomorrow night against the Montreal Canadiens. Big thank you to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, and Boston Pizza. Support those fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For my colleague, Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We'll see you Wednesday night. It's going to be a post-game show right around 9 o'clock. It's a 6:30 p.m. start on Wednesday night. Yes, complete post-game coverage to come, more post-game coverage to come on illegalcurve.com. But until Wednesday at around 9 p.m., we wish you good night and good luck. And thanks for watching the Illegal Curve post-game show.